Podcasting from the Garden State, welcome to another edition of the New Jersey Legal Update, presented by Stark & Stark, a 100-attorney law firm with offices in Princeton, Cherry Hill, Philadelphia, and New York. The New Jersey Legal Update is a weekly podcast providing the latest information on legal developments impacting those living or doing business in New Jersey.
Hi, my name is Stuart Mickelberg. I'm an attorney with the Securities Practice Group here at Stark & Stark. Today I'd like to talk about succession planning for investment advisors and other financial planning professionals. Stark & Stark has significant experience in assisting investment advisory firms throughout the country with succession planning. It is our recommendation that all investment advisory firms should have an up-to-date business succession plan. A business succession plan should accomplish a number of important objectives for an investment advisory firm. First, it should provide a mechanism for the orderly transfer of the business. Second, it should establish a valuation mechanism which avoids disputes between owners as well as possible disputes with the Internal Revenue Service. Third, it should reduce possible disputes between owners and owners' heirs and possible unwanted business partners to whom an ownership interest in the company may otherwise be transferred. And fourth, it should provide financial security to a deceased or disabled owner's family. The unfortunate reality is that a lot of investment advisory firms do not have a formal succession plan in place. The most obvious reason behind this is that business succession planning forces people to consider several unpleasant facts, namely his or her own death or disability. It also forces people to consider their own retirement before they are actually ready to think about retirement. One of the most common misconceptions about succession planning is that it is something that you can wait until you are considering retirement and nearing the end of your career. The truth is that it is never too early to begin to develop a business succession plan. The fact is that business succession planning should be a beginning to mid-career process by which you can plan an early personalized approach to achieving a particular business model that eventually evolves into your succession plan. This is particularly important because typically an investment advisory firm, unlike a lot of other businesses, does not own a lot of hard assets. The largest asset of a typical investment advisory firm is almost always its book of business. These client relationships are pure goodwill, and a book of business is not always the easiest thing to sell. And if it is sold, there is almost always a certain amount of attrition following such a transition. This is why early planning is one of the better options for investment advisory firms. Early planning allows you to begin to choose a successor. Grooming this individual to a point where they could step into your shoes and run the business may take years, and the earlier one plans for this, the more likely there will be a successful transition. The benefit of early planning and grooming a successor makes a lot of sense, in that your clients begin to get comfortable with that other individual. They become to get comfortable with the idea that if you are not around to handle their needs, then this other individual will be. The end result of this is that if something were to happen to you or you were to retire, this other individual would be more than capable to take over the firm. Clients would also be more inclined to stay with the firm, and more importantly, the firm would retain its value, which allows you and your family to receive the greatest amount of money upon the sale of business. I think I've established that succession planning is not something that one should wait to think about until they are nearing retirement. It is something that should be thought about well in advance. The earlier, the better. And now I'd like to talk about some specifics of the internal succession planning process. That is, choosing and grooming a successor to eventually purchase and take over your business. One of the most important things you can do prior to engaging in any sort of succession planning, and some people may actually even consider this to be part of the overall succession plan, is to protect your firm's client relationships. As I mentioned before, typically an investment advisory firm's largest asset is its book of business. Without taking the appropriate steps to protect client relationships, the firm runs the unfortunate consequence of losing client relationships to departing employees. How does the firm avoid this unfortunate consequence? The answer is to require each employee who is responsible for servicing clients to execute a restrictive covenant agreement. The purpose of this relatively simple document, as I just implied, is to prohibit or restrict an employee's ability to divert client accounts from the firm in the event that the firm terminates this individual's employment or in the event that they voluntarily decide to leave the firm. Generally, there are two types of restrictive covenant agreements that an investment advisory firm can require its employees to execute. The first is a non-competition agreement. In this agreement, the firm generally seeks to prohibit the employee from accepting employment in the investment advisory financial services industry for a certain period of time and within a certain geographic area. The second type is a non-solicitation agreement. In this agreement, the firm does not seek to prohibit the employee from accepting employment in the same or similar industry, but instead seeks to prohibit the employee for a certain period of time from soliciting the firm's clients, wherever those clients may be located. Both types of restrictive covenants are intended to protect the company's client relationships. The primary difference is whether the employee will be prohibited from seeking or accepting gainful employment in the same industry as that of your firm, or whether the employee will be permitted to become employed in the same industry, but not with the benefit of the firm's clients or employees. In addition to the type of restrictive covenant, a well-drafted agreement should also include a confidentiality provision. The confidentiality provision should protect all of the firm's information, most importantly, the firm's client information and any proprietary investment processes used by the firm. The optimal time to have an employee execute a restrictive covenant agreement is immediately prior to or simultaneously upon commencing employment. If a new employee brings clients with him when they are hired, it is not unusual to exclude those pre-existing client relationships from the restrictive covenant agreement. However, the agreement should make it clear to this employee that any new clients that they bring into the firm are the firm's clients and are therefore subject to the restrictive covenant agreement. When I talk to clients about restrictive covenant agreements, I oftentimes hear that there is no agreement in place. I oftentimes also hear that they're not sure how they could go back to an employee and have them sign such an agreement after they've been employed for some time. One way to alleviate this fear is by making the restrictive covenant agreement part of some other arrangement with the employee, such as the purchase of stock by that employee or the receipt of a stock bonus by that employee. If you're unable to make the restrictive covenant arrangement part of one of these other arrangements, it is still wise to provide the existing employee a bonus when they sign the agreement. The reason for this is that in many states, continued employment is not sufficient consideration to uphold a restrictive covenant agreement. As I mentioned before, one of the most important things you can do just prior to developing a succession plan or as part of the actual succession plan itself is to put restrictive covenant agreements in place with your employees. If you already have them in place, it is important to have them reviewed periodically to make sure that they are enforceable. Remember, your firm's most important asset is its client relationships, and you and your family's financial security depends upon how well these relationships are protected. Another very important aspect of succession planning is compensation planning. After all, if you're going to choose and then groom a successor to your business, how you go about compensating that individual and ultimately how you go about transferring ownership to them is key. A successful succession plan will include a compensation arrangement that will serve to retain, motivate, and attract competent employees. And it is from these competent employees that you will ultimately choose your successor. It is important to understand and consider the goals and expectations of the employees in developing a compensation plan. Once this is accomplished, there are many compensation plan strategies that could be incorporated into your plan for succession that balance both your objectives with that of the key employees. One such option is a non-qualified stock option plan. Stock option programs allow you to gradually transfer ownership to an employee or employees. Basically, the employee receives a promise from you that he or she will receive the option to purchase stock and become an owner of the company at a future date. The percentage of stock granted to the employee may vary among each of the employees, as well as the date the stock option vests and can be exercised. The use of a vesting schedule can provide an ongoing incentive for the employee to continue employment while providing a longer period of time for you to adjust in the gradual relinquishment of your ownership of the company. Another option for the transfer of ownership is to make use of a restricted stock bonus plan. The restricted stock bonus allows you to provide stock bonuses to key employees instead of cash compensation. In this type of arrangement, the employee is given a bonus of restricted stock. The restrictions placed on the stock would require the employee to return the stock to you upon some triggering event, such as upon termination of employment or upon a specified number of years. The restricted stock bonus should also be structured in such a way that the restrictions attached to the stock should lift at just about the same time you become sure that the employee is there for good and isn't leaving the firm. The cornerstone of a well-designed succession plan is a buy-sell agreement. This agreement establishes a procedure for redeeming or buying out an ownership interest in a closely held business upon the occurrence of a specific event such as death, disability, retirement, divorce, or termination of employment. Buy-sell agreements not only provide protection to each owner's interest, it also ensures that the owner's business legacy continues in accordance with his or her wishes long after the owner has left the company. It will also set forth who will purchase your ownership interest upon your death, disability, or upon your retirement. Think of it as sort of a will for your business. The three most common types of buy-sell agreements are a cross-purchase agreement, a redemption agreement, or a hybrid agreement, which is a combination of the two. In a cross-purchase agreement, the remaining owners directly purchase the shares from the selling owner or the selling owner's estate. The owners depend on each other individually for the purchase of their stock. A cross-purchase structure should only be used if the acquiring owners have the ability to satisfy the terms of the buyout. Unless the acquiring owners have adequately reserved cash or kept up with insurance premiums, the selling owner may not be able to cash out according to the terms of the buy-sell agreement. In a redemption agreement, the company, not the individual owners, purchase the stock from the selling owner. In a redemption structure, the company must have liquidity. The company has the responsibility to maintain cash reserves and the insurance policies on each owner's lives. The stock repurchased by the company under a redemption agreement is retained in the company as treasury stock. The result is that the remaining owner's ownership percentage will increase proportionately. The third type of buy-sell agreement is the hybrid agreement. The hybrid agreement is a combination of a cross-purchase agreement and a redemption agreement. It is sometimes also referred to as a wait-and-see agreement. Generally, in this type of hybrid structure, the remaining owners may wait and see at the time of a triggering event and choose to buy each other out or have the company redeem the stock. The hybrid buy-sell agreement will specifically give either the company or the individual remaining owners the first option to purchase the exiting owner's stock upon a triggering event. If this option is not exercised, then the other would purchase the stock. The keys to a well-drafted buy-sell agreement are to identify who the successors of the company will be, when a succession will take place, and how much the purchase price for the stock will be. It should also provide for a method of funding that will be used in paying for the purchase price. The buy-sell agreement will contain the buyout price for each share of stock in the company. The buyout price will usually be based upon a valuation formula that the owners previously agreed upon. Some buy-sell agreements also require an appraisal by a qualified professional to determine the fair price of the stock. There is no right or wrong method of ascertaining the buyout price. These vary from company to company. Investment advisory firms are unique from many other privately held businesses in that the valuation of the investment advisory business is directly attributed to the number of client accounts and assets under management. For this reason, a buy-sell agreement prepared for an investment advisory firm should contain a mechanism of recalculating the buyout price within a certain period of time after the selling owner has left the company. The reason for this is to account for any attrition of clients. If this is not done and the agreement does not address this issue, the remaining owners or the company may be stuck with a payment obligation to the exiting owner that does not accurately reflect the value of the business. Stating a purchase price in a buy-sell agreement is only one piece of the puzzle. It is also important to address how a buyout will be funded. If an owner dies, such a buyout is usually funded with life insurance proceeds from a life insurance policy owned by either the remaining shareholders or the company. The same can be accomplished upon a disability of a shareholder using disability buyout insurance, although this is usually more expensive than life insurance. Funding can be a little bit more difficult when funding a buyout resulting from a triggering event other than death or disability. Here, the required cash must come from the remaining owner's personal assets or the company's cash reserves. To accommodate this, the buy-sell agreement typically provides for the remaining owners or the company to purchase the stock under a promissory installment note. The idea here is that the buyer, whether it be the remaining shareholders or the company, funds the installment note obligations from the successful business operations. The last thing I want to talk to you about regarding succession planning are the regulatory considerations that are unique to investment advisory firms. These regulatory considerations, as I said, are unique to investment advisory firms. It is important to recognize that as a succession plan gets underway, whether it is at the beginning of the succession plan or at the end, there are various Advisors Act and state regulatory issues that must be addressed. Some of those include amending the firm's ADV filings, the filing, maintaining, or withdrawal of notice filings with the various states, the filing, maintaining, withdrawal of individual investment advisor representative registrations with various states, announcements that must be made to clients, obtaining client approval, and lastly, retaining books and records for the company. If there's one thing you can hopefully take from this podcast, is that it's never too early to develop a business succession plan. We at Stark & Stark are always available to provide guidance to you and help you develop a successful business succession plan. Again, my name is Stuart Mickelberg, and I can be reached at 609-895-7277, or you can email me at smickelberg, M-I-C-K-E-L-B-E-R-G, at stark-stark.com. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's installment of the New Jersey Legal Update by Stark & Stark. And be sure to join us each and every Friday for another insightful discussion. We'd like to hear from you. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information about Stark & Stark and the services we provide, email us at podcast@stark-stark.com.